at the time when the universe was roughly 1,000 seconds old. So this is not, of course, the whole idea of using Big Bang nuclear synthesis as a probe of particle physics is not by any means new. It's been for a while since people were using BBN data, observations and BBN theory to limit the number of active neutrino species or anything that pushes the universe apart in addition to photons, E plus and minus pairs and neutrinos. And for a long time, it's been also our source of knowledge about the ratio of baryons to photons in the universe. But things have changed since a few years ago. We got a superb, highly precise measurement of the ratio of number of photons, of number of baryons over the number of photons from CMB experiments. And this created something, or I'd say strengthened with something what is known as lithium problem. And I'm going to talk a little bit about it. I would, in particular, focus on how the abundance of lithium-6, which is actually mostly believed to be produced in cosmic rays, how its abundance can be drastically changed by particle physics if negatively charged particles are hanging around at that time. And many models of new physics do have heavy charged particles with the masses of, with the lifetimes longer than 1,000 seconds. And then I'll tell you a little bit about the work in progress on lithium-7 abundance and conclude. So just in case that I kind of miss my time in some bad way, I just show you that this is a paper that I posted on the archives last month. And the main idea is as follows, that in many models of particle physics, like supersymmetry, there are possibilities that there are charged particles that are sort of metastable. Quite popular scenario recently was the, the lightest supersymmetric particle is a gravitino, and next to lightest is a charged lepton. And then the decay is naturally delayed because the couplings that connect the two are very small, gravitationally suppressed. Another possibility, you can have a standard sort of lightest supersymmetric particle is neutralino, and next to lightest is charged lepton, but the energy difference between the two is small, and then, of course, your phase space delayed with respect to the decay. So what occurred to me listening to the talks at the COSMO 2004 conference when people discussed the BBN constraints on the decaying stars is that the negatively charged stars would recombine with nuclei, and it depends on the nucleus when it happens, but when they do change nuclear reaction rates in a very significant way. And so my main point here is that these negatively charged particles cling to nuclei with, depending on the nucleus of interest, this binding energy is from 2 MeV to 400 keV. So for helium-4 X minus, this is a 360 keV or so. And then what happens next is that many reaction rates are modified in a big way. Of course, you reduce the Coulomb barrier, but this is not the main modification. The standard Big Bang nuclear synthesis channel for lithium-6 is helium-4 plus deuterium gives lithium-6 plus gamma with a Q value of 1.5 MeV. And in the catalyzed BBN, that's how I call my sort of framework, there is a photonless transition that actually, if you put an effort in estimating or giving somewhat of a calculation of this rate is 8 orders of magnitude more enhanced relative to this rate. And this, of course, provides a very strong constraint on the abundance of the charged particles at the BBN times. And I don't want to go into the details of the astrophysics on lithium-6, but at this point, as we speak now, there are new data coming on about lithium-6 abundance that shows the plateau over the range of metallicities, which is very hard to reconcile with the standard picture of lithium-6 being produced either in the supernovae or in due to the cosmic rays. And that's, of course, sort of, it's tempting to speculate that some of the lithium-6 could have been produced in standard, in the modified picture of BBN. So here is the how the BBN works in general. So the only input parameter in the standard BBN is the ratio of photons to baryons to photons, as we know. And the outcome is the predictions for helium-4, hydrogen, obviously, deuterium, helium-3, and lithium-7. This is normal scale, but for the rest is logarithmic. What you should remember, this is a quarter. This is roughly 10 to the minus 5. And this lithium-7 is 10 to the minus 10. So it's the least abundant element. Deuterium, right. So these lines are predictions of the standard Big Bang nuclear synthesis. The horizontal line corresponds to the observations of these elements. And this vertical line is the line of eta baryons suggested by the cosmic microwave background measurements. And you can see that the deuterium is right on money. Its value is 2.6 times 10 to the minus 5, which is often referred as a triumph of this whole picture. However, lithium-7 is way off. And that is what researchers in the field are calling lithium-7 problem. Lithium-7 on this branch of its curve is produced mostly as beryllium-7, which few days after the Big Bang attracts the electrons on itself and converts through the capture to lithium-7. Here is another graph that shows somewhat the gravity of the problem. So here's a metallicity here. There's observations of lithium-7. At large metallicity, you can see that the big spread in lithium because the environments are different. It can be sort of produced or destroyed. But as you go to the lower metallicities, there is a so-called spike plateau, which basically believed to be related to the primordial range of lithium. And this is the WMAP 3 values. I quote exactly directly the paper where they kind of WMAP collaboration, I think, realizes that this is somewhat of a problem because out of many BBN predictions, they picked up this lithium-7 and put it right there. So this is way off. The predictions are a lot higher for lithium-7 than the observations. If this line would show a bit of a slant or would not be as parallel, there would be less of a problem. They would say, well, maybe something going on that we don't understand. Here, for example, to explain this deficiency by standard means, you would have to invoke a new mechanisms of destruction inside the stars, and somehow that should be conspiring with the range of metallicities such that, you know, the line comes out nearly perfect and there is no spread in the dots, right? This is very difficult to achieve, but maybe it's possible. Well, the astroparticle physics is something which is never guaranteed, right? So you do something, you work on the non-standard scenarios, but maybe there are standard explanations to it. Anyways, I'd just like to say that if people would like to think about some data in cosmology, in precision cosmology, that require explanations. And lithium-7 is certainly, at least on my list, among the top five problems. You'd ask the question, how is it possible, you know, just to wiggle reaction rates and get a different output of lithium-7? It turned out that the reaction rates, helium-3 plus helium-4 going to beryllium-7 plus gamma, it happens to be one of the best known reactions because it's needed for other purposes. You can actually even take solar neutrino flux and measure it by snow and calibrate the rate for this reaction using standard solar physics. And everything agrees so far. There was a French group that sort of tried to modify different reaction rates and see how far your kind of you can move this lithium line prediction. And it turned out that they needed a factor of 1,000 increase in the certain reaction rates, just ad hoc increase in the reaction rate of deuterium plus beryllium-7 to accommodate for the suppression. And that's unrealistic. It's been checked now experimentally that doesn't happen. So it's it very well may be that the clue to lithium-7 is in some new physics. So there were some ideas of how to cure a lithium-7 problem using the decaying particles. So suppose you have what you need actually, sort of phenomenologically known, is that at the time of temperature of 40 kV, you inject about 10 to the minus 5 energetic relative to hydrogen energetic neutrons, and that can indeed create a dip in prediction of lithium-7. But what also happens with this scenario, you always overproduce deuterium by and large, because it's hard to imagine that you inject something in the system. You don't affect the elements that are more abundant, and you affect only the elements that are least abundant. So this is a contrived scenario. So with this catalyzed Big Bang nucleosynthesis idea, you can affect beryllium-7 and lithium-7 in a big way because, as I'll show, the binding energy is such that the formation of the bound states with heavy charged particles with beryllium-7 does happen at temperatures of 40 kV, and there are several mechanisms that enhance the suppressed lithium-7, essentially. Well, but let's leave lithium-7 aside. This is a work in progress, and I'd like to talk a little bit about lithium-6. Lithium-6 can be produced in standard Big Bang nucleosynthesis, but the total output is at the level of 10 to the minus 14, and this is way below the observed now what is look like a plateau at the level of 10 to the minus 11. The main reason, this is a very exciting table from, somewhat older table of reactions, but no big change here. So here is the main reaction that produces lithium-7 as beryllium-7, helium-3 plus helium-4. So there are standard factors, gamma suppression, and so on. The coefficient, an overall coefficient here is 6 times 10 to the 6. But if you go to the lithium-6 channel, it's 30. And it's a very similar mechanism via emission of a gamma. And you can ask the question, why is that happening so? And there is a very clear-cut answer, is that this reaction is actually electric quadrupole reaction because the charge to mass ratio for deuterium and helium-4 is the same and there is no dipole emission. So this there is a reason why lithium-6 is so much suppressed in BBN, in standard BBN. If it's so much suppressed, as we all know, people who do precision physics anyways, you can use this opportunity and put the limits on non-standard scenarios. So now if you have charged particles, a very naive sort of two-body variational calculations of quantum mechanics give you this. There's a bound state. Well, I guess this is the most relevant one. So the helium 4 x minus has the binding energy of 352 keV, and it will start forming stable. It's not going to be destroyed by background gammas below the temperatures of 8.2 keV. You can check that their combination rates are faster than the Hubble rate, and therefore the Saha type formula is can be used. Now, like I said before, beryllium 7 is it sort of recombines can recombine, or let's say is not going to be destroyed by background gamma at the temperatures of 30 keV. So. Now, no, as long as it's heavy, it doesn't matter. What I need to know is abundance, and that's for the beryllium 7. For lithium 7, the abundance of X is important. For helium 4, it will always form the bound states because the helium is so abundant, right? So. Right. So here's a technical slide. So here's here's basically a Saha type formula where I also put some factor that accounts for the decay of the of possible decay of this charged particle, and this is what we should think of it as basically. If I forget the decay, it's a step, almost like a step function. It recombines pretty efficiently under 8 keV. So the standard mechanism is here. Deuterium merges with helium 4, emits a long way gamma, long way in the sense of in terms of nuclear size, which is a few Fermi, and the wavelength of the gamma going out is right. Inverse of 1.5 MeV, which is 150 Fermi. And so with the binding bound state, what happens is that there is an enhancement because the small gradient of the electric field that interacts with this nuclear quadrupole transition moment now is replaced by the strong electric field gradient inside the bound states. And you can do the quantum mechanical calculation and relate the two astrophysical S factors. And this is, of course, sort of assuming that the radius at which it sits, which is 4 Fermi, somewhat larger than the nuclear radius, which is not such a good approximation. But anyways, if I just use this quantum mechanical calculation, and I can, of course, optimize for whatever... But what I'd like to say that also ab initio nuclear calculations of this are also possible. Anyways, if I do that, I get the enhancement, as I said, 8 orders of magnitude. So now we can sort of write down a very simple equation that is relevant for the lithium 6 at the temperatures of 8 keV. This is the only sort of nuclear reaction that is operative at that time. The rest is very well below the Hubble scale, Hubble rate. And so if I just use this as an somewhat loose observational bound on lithium 6, I get the conclusion that if there's a metastable charged particles that the lifetime set of larger than 10 to the 5 seconds, their abundance relative to protons should be 10 to the minus 7. So even a very one part per 10 million is enough to catalyze this reaction. And if I put a normalization on the entropy, so relative to photons and neutrinos, it has to be less than 10 to the minus 17. But if you make it right at the level of 10 to the minus 17, you can reproduce what you need for lithium 6. But I'm not going to say that this should be the explanation for lithium 6. This is how the profiles with the temperature look like. So this is the line down below. This is the standard BBN evolution of lithium 6. And these are different scenarios with different lifetimes and different initial abundances here. So maybe I'll show the last slide relevant for this. So you can, of course, play this game and say, well, let me sort of have the lifetime of this particle in units of 1,000 seconds here and its initial abundance. And this is the sort of the exclusion line above which lithium-6 rules out this scenario. You can see that since these are charged particles, you can calculate their sort of initial abundance at the freeze-out when they annihilate at early temperatures. And that's sort of a typical range that you get there. So you can see that this exclusion plot is very strong, and it basically rules out the charged heavy particles with, I don't know, lifetime of 20,000 seconds. And if you look at this, you would say that charged particles that are heavy should not live on average more than 4,000 seconds, unless, of course, you find some formidable mechanism of depleting them at the early stage. Well, time is up. Maybe I just say, instead of a conclusion of the, about the ongoing work with, that I do with my students, Chris Bird and Kristen Cookmans, who's in the audience, and we work on lithium-7 problem with charged particles. As I argued, these charged particles have to decay by the time they get into the binding states with helium-4, otherwise they will overproduce lithium-6. But you can have enough, if you have enough of them at the time when beryllium-7 is formed, the model-independent prediction is that they will deplete the abundance of beryllium-7 because they will catalyze certain reaction rates that destroy beryllium. And in some cases, quite a bit. The actual question is that if you get enough of these bound states, and now the you controlled by the abundance of these charged particles, because if you have too fewer of them, the rate of formation of the bound states is under the Hubble rate, and you don't form efficiently the bound states. So, and we're working on a nuclear calculation of that, because the naive sort of hydrogen-like recombination is actually, I am convinced now, not sufficient. Well, let me just show my conclusion that catalyzed BBN that I sort of tried to present here is a new twist on old story of particle physics being probed by primordial nuclear synthesis, that I showed that lithium-6 output can be efficiently catalyzed by the presence of the negatively charged heavy particles. There are plenty of particle physics models where it can happen, and I wouldn't argue that I'm supporting or not supporting them. I don't care. And whether or not catalyzed BBN provides an efficient way of depleting lithium-7 is an open question that is under investigation now. I know that an initial abundance of 10 to the minus 2 is guaranteed relative to protons, guarantees the destruction of beryllium-7 to the right level, but this is assuming that's a question of recombination rate, which I have to calculate more precisely at this point.